This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
So we are in the third and final part of this, I don't want to say failed series, but this ahead of time series that I've been doing over the last 2 weeks. So in week one, we spoke about failed startups that had the right ideas and pretty good concepts, but they were just launched a few years too soon. Those same concepts went on to become trendsetters and landscape changes for other brands and companies down the line, which, you know, is a shame for the ones who started it. And then last week, we spoke about five gadgets that also went through those same problems. Take the Betamax, for example. It was better than the VHS, it was smaller, it was also easier to carry around, but it never became the mainstream home video format because VHS did, and it simply boiled down to timing and price points. So that's why this week I am going to continue and wrap up this series with five more gadgets that were way ahead of their time. These companies and their gadgets and their inventors, they had all the futuristic ideas and they knew what they were doing. They knew what technology should and would be like. But these gadgets just couldn't go the distance due to a number of reasons at the time. This is 5 for Fortune with Arvind Yuvaraj, and this episode is called 5 Failed Gadgets That Were Just Ahead of Their Time, Part 2. So, let's take a look at the fascinating story of Apple Newton, how it was supposed to be Apple's flagship product, and how Steve Jobs himself killed the product in 1998. Number one on today's list is the Apple Newton.
Number one.
Some people call it the Newton, others call it the message pad. It's all pretty much the same thing. Apple announced this product in 1987, and then they only launched it in 1993, which should have been the first sign that maybe the technology to make this work wasn't exactly there to support it at the time. But, you know, still, Apple being Apple, they went ahead, and you can't blame them because that's how inventions work, and that's the kind of behavior that breeds innovation, right? Now, the real problem with the Newton was the way Apple marketed it and the amount of pressure and expectation that the company put on the product. See, Apple invested about $500 million into the development of the Newton range because they wanted it to be a massive success. But the question is, why? I mean, of course, companies want their products to succeed, but why put so much pressure on one device? Well, there are a couple of reasons. Number one, the Newton was the first product to have handwriting recognition, so it was supposed to change the way people use PDAs and mobile devices. Everything was supposed to move towards touchscreen and styluses. The problem here was that the handwriting feature was wonky at best and it glitched, and the software was barely ready in 1993, and once it was released, the Newton was regularly messing up words because it couldn't recognize normal handwriting. So when your main feature on a product is the handwriting recognition and that feature doesn't work as well as it should, obviously people are going to be very angry with the product. Of course, the other reason is that Steve Jobs, the founder of Apple, was removed from his own company, and Apple needed a way to prove that they were just as good without him, so they released the Newton and they wanted it to be the new Mac, which obviously it wasn't. The Newton only sold a few 100,000 units in 5 years, which sounds like a lot, but it is nothing compared to the numbers Apple wanted to reach. And then when Steve Jobs re-entered the company and took over again, he immediately killed the product because he didn't like a bunch of things about it, including the wonky handwriting recognition function. Then there was also the part about the price tag. So at $700 US, the Newton cost way too much for something that didn't work as smoothly as it should have. Now, we can argue for hours about how successful or how much of a failure or how much of a non-success the Newton was, but the reality is that it doesn't actually matter. The Newton was ended due to a few reasons. Steve Jobs not liking it was one of it, but it did something for Apple that would turn it into the biggest tech company in the world today, and that is it showed them what worked and it showed them what didn't with touchscreens and mobile devices. So now Apple took what they had learned from the Newton, and with Steve Jobs back in the scene, they started to work on the iPad, which is now the standard bearer and overall benchmark for tablets and touchscreen mobile devices. And because of how successful the iPad is, Samsung's line of Galaxy Note devices shares that pie, and they launch a new Note device every year as well. So yeah, you know, maybe the Newton didn't didn't do as well as Apple wanted it to, but in a way, it gave the company ideas and product ideas that changed the tech landscape in a big, big way. And in the end, that's all that really counts, no? Anyway, speaking of Apple products, how many of you have an Apple Watch? It's pretty cool, right? See, before Apple released their fancy watch and before the Moto 360 or the LG G Watch R or, you know, whatever they were calling it, or even things like the Pebble, Microsoft was already ahead of the curve with their own version of the smartwatch back in 2004. Number two on today's list of five gadgets that failed because they were ahead of their time is Microsoft Spotwatch.
Number two.
You know, it's funny how a watch suffers from bad timing. For some reason, Microsoft knew that people would want to wear their smart gadgets on their wrists even before a lot of smartwatch providers thought of that idea. And it wasn't a bad idea, to be honest. It was just an idea that should have targeted a niche market instead of what Microsoft was trying to achieve. See, even today, the customer base for smartwatches isn't that wide. That's why companies still focus on their primary gadgets like phones and tablets and whatnot instead of their watch line. And maybe that's because they learned from the response that Microsoft Spot got. Now, Spot, S-P-O-T, stands for Smart Personal Object Technology, and it was a very early form of Internet of Things technology because it allowed you to connect the watch to other household devices and communicate with them using a single interface and smart software. Great idea, just not for 2004 when the Spot was released. Because for something like this to work, you need the Internet of Things, and in 2004, the Internet of Things wasn't really a thing, or a big thing, or as big a thing as it is now. And even now, right, only segments of the population are able to enjoy that kind of connectivity through their own smart devices. Anyway, Bill Gates himself was big on this smartwatch. Microsoft got the help of big brands like Fossil and Swatch to design these watches so that they would be trendy and fashionable, but also a thing of the future because of Microsoft tech implemented into the watch itself. Obviously, none of that worked, and the Spot was declared a commercial failure after failing to capture the market. If you go to Wikipedia, it says that Spot's failure was because of subscription-based business model, which wasn't something that the customers wanted at the time. Support was limited to North America, which was another problem, and the emergence of more efficient and popular forms of data distribution and mobile feature availability that surpasses the features that Spot offered. So, again, it had few features, but it couldn't compete with the other things on the market. And the biggest problem was no one actually wanted a smartwatch like this back then. What all that basically means is that the time just wasn't right for the smartwatch. I mean, we don't even know if the time is right now. So maybe if Spot makes a comeback 10 years from now, 2027 maybe, it could become the best smartwatch we'll ever have. Who knows? Right, time for a break. We are talking about five gadgets that failed because they were just ahead of their time. And when we come back, we'll talk about a very interesting thing called Polaroid Polar Vision. Five of Fortune will be right back, BFM 89.9.
Before Friday materializes. BFM 89.9.
Hello and welcome back to Five for Fortune. I'm Arvind Yuvaraj and we are talking about gadgets and technological innovations that had all the right ideas and all of the wrong timing. So if some of these gadgets had come out years and years later, they could have become huge successes, maybe. But I don't know if the same can be said about the Polaroid Polar Vision, though. Let's check that out as number three on today's list.
Number three.
The Polaroid Polar Vision. Now, If this had come out today, I think hipsters would spend like $500 on it just to have it in their hands. I mean, this is the definition of a hipster gadget. Unfortunately for the Polaroid, people weren't into leaky lenses and faded videos back then, so it was labeled a massive failure. In fact, I think it's the biggest failure on this list, and even last week's list combined, because it honestly never bounced back. Anyway, back in 1977, Polaroid launched an instant video camera system. And they didn't call it a video camera because it wasn't a video camera. So it was like Instagram, but way bulkier and way more expensive and with none of the technology. Now, people who bought this thing could shoot motion films, not videos, but motion films that were recorded onto video cassettes. And then they had to play them back via a VCR viewing terminal, sort of like an LCD screen that was attached to the Polaroid itself. So it was like a bulky device that you could use to shoot videos, and then you could watch it on the screen that was attached to this big device, kind of like a camcorder. And if you're thinking from 1977, that must have been pretty cool, right? Nope, not really. See, because of the filtering layer that the Polavision used, there was an issue of light loss, which means that the only thing that was captured was red, green, and blue light at any given point. So in low light situations, the Polavision was pretty bad or pretty useless. And the film had a gray tint all over it. So people complained that when they viewed the film on the Polavision's built-in screen, the images were murky at best, which is probably why artists who like to experiment with, you know, this sort of like avant-garde film and stuff, they used it for exhibitions and special projects because, of course, they did. So what else was wrong? Well, the Polaroid cartridge that was needed to capture film only ran for 3 minutes long, and the cost of getting enough film to match a standard videotape, which was about 1.5 hours, was insanely expensive, so that didn't help either. Oh, and there was no sound. So it was like capturing standard-colored, murky, 3-minute-long silent films. So, like I said, it's a hipster's dream, this thing. That gray tint that they're talking about is literally an editing tool in Instagram and every other video editing software today, and they call it fade. Just look at Instagram under your edit and you can fade pictures on purpose. So in this era, the one we live in now, of purposely making pics look grainy and old and as if the camera is broken with light leakage, that Polavision would have sold like hotcakes. Unfortunately, back then, the thing was such a colossal flop that they discontinued the Polavision just 2 years in 1979 and sold all of their manufacturing equipment for about $68.5 million, which sounds, again, like a lot, but it was peanuts even back then. And the chairman and founder of Polaroid, Edwin H. Land, he resigned from his chief executive position in 1980, and then he left the company altogether just 2 years later, so pretty bad blow. I guess in the case of Polavision, they would have had to wait like 35 years for hipsters to gobble them up. But then again, you have technology and stuff like Instagram and standard Polaroid cameras, so why would they buy this in the first place? Who knows? I don't know. It's never too late to make a comeback, no? Right, ever wonder where Siri came from? Alexa? Cortana? Any voice assistant for that matter, like ever wonder where this originated? Voice recognition software isn't new. In fact, it became a big deal back in the 90s, it was developed back in the 70s, and the only problem was that it couldn't exactly recognize voices as well as Siri, Alexa, and other virtual assistants can. Let's check out probably the most popular voice recognition tool, and it is called Dragon Naturally Speaking. That's number 4 on today's list.
Number 4.
So Dragon Naturally Speaking, it was this very simple, straightforward speech recognition tool that came out in 1997, and it allowed you to communicate with any computer or any device that it was installed on, and it would allow you to work on the window that was in front of you using just your voice. And it was a simple tool, so it didn't have like background window capability. You couldn't tell your PC to do anything you wanted it to. You could only order the window that was right in front of you to do what you wanted it to do. Now, Dragon had a couple of problems. One, the speech recognition was kind of slow. I mean, compared to the stuff today, obviously it was slow back then, but it sometimes lagged for a little too long. But that wasn't even its biggest problem. In fact, Dragon's biggest issue wasn't with its performance, it was with its management. So, Dragon Systems was developed in the 70s by Dr. James Baker and his wife Janet, and then they launched Dragon Naturally Speaking software in 1997. It had so much potential that they managed to sell the company in 2000 to a Belgian corporation named Lenout and Hospi. Now, these guys were involved in some really weird, shady financial scandals, and they declared bankruptcy in November that same year, so that was a rough period. So once all this commotion settled down, right, the rights to the Dragon line of products were acquired by ScanSoft. Now, ScanSoft was a company in Burlington, Massachusetts. And here's the interesting part. The naturally speaking part of the Dragon suite never really went away. So ScanSoft, they rebranded themselves as Nuance Communications in 2005, which was 5 years after the bankruptcy of Dragon's parent company, and they started incorporating the voice recognition in smart TVs. Pretty cool, right? So from 2012, all LG smart TVs that have a voice recognition function are actually using the same speech engine as Dragon Naturally Speaking. So I guess this tool or gadget didn't really fail because of its own shortcomings. I mean, it could have become a popular voice assistant like Alexa or Siri, but the fact that it's still used in some capacity today should say enough about the product. Okay, let's move into the final segment on today's episode. We are talking about five gadgets that failed because they were just ahead of their time. And this list, both last week's and this week's combined, wouldn't be complete if we didn't talk about the Dynabook. Because the Dynabook was talking about touchscreens and desktops and laptops long before anyone was even trying to do it. Dynabook is number five on today's list.
Number 5.
I love the idea behind the Dynabook because it just sounds so genuine. This was an idea proposed by Alan Kay back in the late 60s and early 70s. By the way, Alan Kay is a computer scientist known for his work on object-oriented programming and windowing graphical user interface design. Yeah, pretty easy stuff, right? So he wanted to make a personal computer for children of all ages, and his proposed design for this device, it looked like a 13-inch laptop without the foldable mechanism. So basically a tablet, but with a keyboard. I mean, not a virtual keyboard, like an actual physical keyboard. Now, the reason for this was so that kids could carry around all their educational information in one place and be able to interact with the information using the keyboard or even a touchscreen. Alan Kay was way, way ahead of his time. He actually came up with the idea after the military were using or looking for a way to carry their SOPs and guidebooks around in a more convenient way instead of taking bulks of papers, you know, wherever they were going. Now, the thing is, it's hard to say if the Dynabook failed, because logically it didn't. It wasn't even a fully realized device yet. It was a concept that Alan Kay kept pushing and it never really got made. But the reason it didn't get made is because the technology to make something like that happen and be accessible to children just wasn't around at the time. And I think it's safe to say that every other mobile device or laptop has used the concept of Dynabook in some way, either directly or indirectly, because we have laptops with touchscreens now, and every mobile device basically relies on touchscreens. And these gadgets can be customized for children. In fact, the children of today are way more in tune with these gadgets than their adult counterparts. The Dynabook could have been a massive trendsetter if it had been announced at the right time. It just so happens that the computers and mobile devices used a lot of the concepts of the Dynabook, but created gadgets that had a ton of other functions as well. Now, the funny thing is, Alan Kay doesn't believe that the Dynabook has been invented yet, even with all our modern devices. He admits that the mobile devices can do everything he imagined for the Dynabook, and even more than that, but he says that a personal computer made solely for children with enough core educational content just doesn't exist yet. And if you think about it, he's right. So maybe Dynabook wasn't ahead of its time at all. Maybe it's something that's just about to come out. Number Okay, that's about it for today's episode. Hope you learned a thing or two about gadgets, technology, and the weird timing of things. I'll be back with something a little different next week, so tune in at 11 a.m. on Friday to check that one out. This is Arvind Yuvaraj, and that was 5 for Fortune. Download the podcast via the BFM app, available on the Apple App Store for iOS users and the Play Store for my fellow Android users. Also, Enterprise Biz Bytes is coming up at noon, and you don't want to miss the fresh stories we have on tech, business, and work, so stick around for that. BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.